Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, a wonderful author and a woman who does so many things so well, Mitzi DeWitt. How are you, Mitzi?
I'm great. And thank you.
Well, we were just speaking a little off mic, about a little bit about your history, but let's start from the beginning, if you don't mind. Where were you born and where were you raised?
I was born in Ponca City, Oklahoma, and I was reared in that town for 18 years. And then I left and came to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I got married. And then we went back to Oklahoma. And from there, it's just kind of around different places.
Well, you've written so much and you're prolific in regards to your work, and really, you started writing essays, and they turned into books, and they're such brilliant works. And by no means is this a slight against Oklahoma, because it's an amazing area, but you usually don't think of Oklahoma as being a breeding ground for forward thinking and writing. Tell me what it. Well, first of all, tell me if I'm wrong on that. And are there all these millions of people, growing up in Oklahoma that have that motivation? Or were you, a diamond found in the midst of Oklahoma there?
Well, I think I didn't belong there. For one thing, the town was 5 miles from the Ponca Indian Reservation. And I was always intrigued by the Indian dances, the indigenous music, the powwows, the Indian culture. My father was a minister of music in a church, and it was always in my life to have music, so that was a big influence on my life. The music, I think, saved me from being a stick in the mud in that town. I really couldn't wait to get out of there, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't want to be presumptuous that you would feel that way, but you must have felt like you were just bursting to get out. And let's talk about that. You're a little girl, and your dad's a minister of music, and you're. Obviously, when you're a young lady, young man, growing up in rural surroundings, you're out there looking for influences. You're out there looking for stimuli, and you have it in your dad. You have it in music, and you have it in the Indian reservations. But what was the first time, as a young girl, that you realized, you know what? There's not an awful lot around here, and it's a great big world. When was that? Can you pinpoint an age, a time period in your life when you realized, you know what, there's a lot more out there and I'd like to see it?
This doesn't really directly go to what you're asking, but when I was 3 years old, I was put in the Chenoweth & Green Music Store window as sort of an example, a guinea pig for people at Christmas time to come in and buy pianos. Yeah. And the reason was because I had perfect pitch.
Wow.
And so they would ask people to come in and they could sing a note or play a note and I would tell them what it was. So,
And how old were you?
I think I was three.
Oh my gosh.
And so I never could quite understand the whole point of it, because I thought everybody could hear, what I was hearing. It didn't make any sense to me that it was a big deal. So I thought, well, maybe it's because people didn't know the names of the notes on the piano. So that was kind of my first eye-opener.
Not to cut you off, but I don't want to tell you how many people would love to sing, but they're just tone deaf. They're complete, never mind perfect pitch, they're just tone deaf, and it's not their fault. It's just something they're born with. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that was just you asking me about when was my turning point, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
That showed me that maybe I wasn't just like everybody else, and I think that was it.
Wow. Three
it
years
just
old.
Woke me up to realize that there was something else that I had that other people didn't.
Yeah. Now, going from a 3-year-old in a window, you know, almost like an exhibit almost, right? You're an exhibit.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and very interesting. And so you go from there, you go into kindergarten. And what's the school system like in the town you grew up in, Oklahoma? Is it, and again, I don't want to stereotype. I don't want to be disparaging to, rural areas or whatever, but I can't imagine it's first-class education there.
Well, Ponca City was a very strange town. For one thing, it was the hometown of E.W. Marland, who was the governor of the state, and he was also the founder of Conoco Oil Company. And so Ponca City was a town divided, if I ever saw one. It was divided by railroad tracks, quite literally, and it was divided by has and have-nots.
And was there a wrong side of the tracks and a right side of the tracks?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I saw that firsthand over and over. And I hated it. You know, I didn't want that. But I grew up on the haves part of the town. And my mother was actually, at one time, I shouldn't say this maybe out loud, but she was married to Ed Seligny, who was one of the Seligny people who came to the Oklahoma during the land run and was a big landowner. And my mother inherited a lot of money from him. So I was on the haves part of town.
Wow. And that's nothing to apologize for. That's it's unjust, but you didn't create that injustice.
And so to say that Ponca City had a bad school system or it was all down and outers is not the way it was at all. It was almost the opposite.
Interesting.
In fact, I grew up with country club people, you know, and there was a lot going on there. So I saw people coming from in the community concert series. I got to accompany an opera singer when I was a very young girl.
Hmm.
I had a good life.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it. I'm going to interrupt for a second to remind folks that are just tuning in or just turning on their radios that this is Frank McKay, but much more importantly, our very special guest is someone who's got music in her blood. She's a wonderful author and a prolific writer, and her name is Mitzi DeWitt. Mitzi, I cut you off in the middle there, but you were talking about you had been positioned on the right side of the tracks in rural Oklahoma, and I guess thank God for that. Thankfully, you had that. What if you weren't? What if you were on that other side? How much things? How much would things have been different?
Well, that's why I was so intrigued with the Indians, quite honestly, because they were the have-nots, and they were ostracized in the town, and you could tell the Indian reservation immediately because there was nothing there. It was just a blank. So I wanted to know about those people. And I made friends with those people when I was in junior high school. And in some ways, it was not a good thing because it was just another story, which I don't really want to go there. But my father died when I was 14 years old, suddenly of a heart attack. And that was another turning point in my life. And then I remarried. I mean, I didn't remarry. I got married at the age of 16 because I was desperate to
try to... Wow. 16 years old, getting married. That's wow.
I got married. I had a child. And I, my life was kind of a disaster for a while.
Well, let's go back on some of that because that's fascinating. Even now, so many years later, to lose your dad at 14 years old, I don't know that you ever fully recover from that. And that's
exactly. And that's a very perceptive thing for you to say. Yes.
Yeah, and I think when something like that happens, there's no real explanation. And by the way, your father was a person of God, right? A minister of music, and had some. Strong beliefs. I'm positive just from the little bit of background I have on him. But
yes.
Are you at 14 years old saying, You know, why him? Why dad? Why? I mean, are there just endless amounts of questions coming from a 14-year-old girl that's just developing?
Oh, yeah. I was crushed. My life never recovered. I was shocked. I was, you know, I cried for years, really. And so I was empty, and I found this boy who, you know, he was wet behind the ears too, and so that's what happened.
What was your first? And again, not to get too personal here, but you lose your dad at 14 years old, and then you meet this, you know, boy. You said it properly. You know, at that age, you're at 16 years old. You're a girl, and you married a boy.
He was a man. He was 18.
He was right, 18 year old. You know, I have four kids and two over the age of 18, and it's I can't imagine them, you know, being ready for marriage at 18 years old.
And, you got that right.
Yeah. I mean, do you, at this point, is anybody explaining to you, maybe slow down, calm down, you're still reeling from the death of your dad, don't do anything hasty, this is too early. Are you getting that kind of advice, or you're kind of left to your own devices?
Well, I was an only child, and my mother was older. She was in her 40s when I was born. So she was struggling herself, trying to cope. So we were, I guess, in our own little worlds. I was just very lonely. That's all I know. I felt like I had no friends, no one to understand. And so that's where I was.
What was your new husband? What was his interest? Was he into sports? Was he into music? Was he into writing? You know, none of the above.
None of the above. He was from the wrong side of the tracks.
Was he part of the Indian tribe?
No, he wasn't. But he, I hope his family isn't listening to this broadcast, but they really didn't have much in the way of interest, period. They were, you know, they gardened. They kept the house clean.
Simple people.
They were nice, but they were not into any sort of intellectual thing at all.
How long did the marriage last?
3 years, 3.5 years.
Oh, 3 years. I mean, you talk about being thrown into the water and sink or swim. I mean, I can't imagine you had much experience in the adult life at 16 years old, and you're dealing here at 14 years old, losing someone you're so close to, someone you loved, and. You know, there's no, even though there were books on it, there really aren't. There aren't classes on it. There aren't books, you know, like on it. You really have to just learn to do it on your own. And if your mother's grieving and she's, you know, devastated by it as well, you talk about being alone in the world. And for all these major things, you're talking about death, you're talking about marriage and the romance that goes along with it, or that, you know, should go along with it. Wow. Just wow.
Well, my father was 54 years old when he died, and he had just completed, he was a conductor, director of the Kiwanis Glee Club, which was later called the Plainsman Chorale, which is a men's chorus. And he had walked off the stage after the concert and collapsed from a major heart attack and died.
What, were you at the performance?
No, I was at a girlfriend's house, and it was at her house where he didn't want me to be. So I had a double guilt, you know, and I never saw him again, and I struggled through all that, and then I hated music after that. I wouldn't touch the piano.
Wow.
I hated God. I didn't want to have anything to do with the church. I was just in turmoil. I was in hell.
Yeah, wow. Just, I mean, who wouldn't be? It's just an amazing, you know, an amazing, you know, turn of events there, and the fact that you were at a girlfriend's house that he didn't, what was it, like he forbade you to go there? Was it that type of thing, or was it?
Yeah, she was not the kind of person he wanted me to be around. She was one of the people that introduced me to some of the Indian boys, and he knew that, you know, and so it was a struggle. It was a struggle between those people you know, the two sides of the track situation.
You know, I know it's easy to say, you know, from the outside, but obviously none of these things were your fault. I mean, this is not, you know, at 14 years old, I mean, young ladies and young men, God, I don't want to tell, we don't have enough time to talk about the mistakes I made at 14 years old, and keeping in mind that, you know, I grew up in a lower middle class area, and, you know, I came from from a split family, a divorced family or whatever, but it's nothing like losing a father that early. And I hope somewhere along the line you forgave yourself because you didn't do anything wrong in the first place. Did you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but have you properly forgiven yourself for being somewhere your dad didn't want you to be?
It took forever. I think maybe now I finally have, but you know, that was a long, long process of having to recover from that. So I finally, actually, when I had my child at the age of 16, and of course I couldn't go to school back then. That was in the, you know, you just didn't show up pregnant in high school. And so I was taking correspondence courses. My mother was very influential in the town, and so she had convinced the school board to allow me to take correspondence courses from the high school. And the teachers would send home the lesson plans or the lessons, and I would do the lessons and then take the test at the school. So I graduated from high school with my class of 384 people, and I was actually third in my class.
Wow. Oh, so, my gosh. That is an accomplishment.
Yeah. So, and I was also, because I guess who I was given a whole lot of scholarships. And I got to go to school, and I went to Oklahoma State University, which is only 40 miles away because I had a small child.
You were a Sooner.
I'm a Sooner.
Right. just an amazing resilience for a young lady to... And again, I'm going to remind folks once again, if you're just turning on your radio, Mitzi DeWitt is my very special guest, Frank McKay, here with an extraordinary lady, a brilliant lady. And if you read any one of her essays that turned into many books, you'll know exactly what I'm speaking of. And she is, how many books all total, Mitzi?
Well, I've actually written six, but one of them was published privately. So I have to say five books, and I'm on the seventh, which is turning into about 10, I think, because there's so much material.
Yeah. Is it, and again, pardon the cliche question here, but is it therapeutic for you to do these writings?
It's compulsion. It's an obsession. I just feel like I have to. It's something that I'll have to get into that with you when we have maybe the next time, but I believe that was another turning point.
Yeah, it's just amazing. But what you've written and just it just seems to flow out of you. Is that a misconception I have, or is it hard work writing for you, or is it just something that comes naturally?
No, it's I guess I could almost say both, because it starts out as being almost like a revelation that is given. And that might sound spooky, but that's how it feels. It's something that's given to me to do, and it comes to me. And then after that point, it kind of becomes more work, because then I have to sort it out, put it on a computer, make it understandable, hopefully, to somebody else.
Yeah. And do you have in the back of your mind that there are, you know, 14-year-old girls or boys or younger, you know, a little older that have lost their parents and they're about to, you know, make a mistake as part of the reeling process, you know, reeling or flailing or whatever you would like to call it. Do you have that in mind when you're writing, and how much of your writing do you believe could help steer that lost soul, whoever he or she may be, into you know, a better place for themselves? Is that at all in your framework, in your mental framework at all, or is that kind of me just like stretching here?
I don't treat it like that. No, it's not because of trying to help somebody else. It's just because it's like, I feel the organic need to have to do it. That's about all I can say.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful that you do it. And it's great that you're able to do it so well. It's beautiful. Your writing is really, you know, wonderful. And you know, again, we got a couple minutes left with Mitzi DeWitt and Frank McKay here with the wonderful author, and she's a success story. I mean, you really are, and the fact that you've survived and not only survived but succeeded should serve as an inspiration to young men and women. I have a dear friend of mine. I talk to him every day. He lost his dad at 10 years old, and he has just never gotten. No, he's 51 years old now. He has just never gotten over that. It's just you shouldn't lose a parent that early. There's too much you don't understand about it, and it happens all the time. And there's there's really nothing you can do about it. It's nothing there. Let me, and again, I don't want to get too caught up on this now because maybe we need a lot more time for this. I have OCD, right? I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and I have to write or I have to create to feel right. Do you have any of that?
Well, it's never been diagnosed that way, but maybe that's what it is.
Either as mine. I'm self-diagnosed, but go ahead.
Yeah, maybe that is exactly what it is. I feel this compulsion that I have to write, or maybe it is because I've never gotten over the loss of my father, and I'm trying to come back to him or trying to get him back to me. Or I don't know subconsciously what the reason for the writing is. I just know that it's part of me, and I have to do it. It's my connection to the soul somehow.
You know, I think it's a good thing. Well, it's certainly a great thing with you, but I mean, with me, I have this, I don't know if it's neurosis, where I have to complete things. You know, everything I do, I have to complete projects. I have to get things, I can't leave something half done, and I want to do it well and everything else. And the only place it hurts me is with food. I should be able to say, you know, the starving kids in Africa are not going to get my hamburger or whatever the heck I'm eating, you know, like if I don't finish it. So I wish I could just turn it on and off with that, but I'm very much into completion. Is that any part of you?
Sure, yeah, I think so. I'm always trying to complete, you know, I teach piano. I have 50 piano students, so I'm always trying to complete their assignments with, you know, one thing or another. They're performing here or performing there, and we have to complete that series of pieces. Or it's, of course, anything you do in life, you have to complete it. It's a process, like a cooking. You know, you finish your meal, you cook it, and you finish it, and you clean it up.
And again, 50 students, I mean, you're talking about a lot of different personalities and a lot of different types of motivation to get them. And again, we'd need we need a lot more time to get into that at this point. But do you have any young people that you're teaching that have lost parents?
I don't think so. I don't think that's part of it. I have mostly Asian kids who have very strong parents, and 100% behind them and behind me, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, do you know, the reason I ask, and it's unusual to lose a parent at that age, and again, it's not unique. I mean, it happens all the time, and it's tragic. It really is tragic, but so few people truly understand. Like adults that have lost a parent at a young age, and I think, you know, whenever I meet somebody in there, there's a sadness to them, or there's something that's bothering them, somewhere in the conversation, I try to find out whether they lost a parent at a young age, and often they have, and it's really, it is so horrible. It's such a horrible thing for a child to deal with, but an adult as well. Just amazing. But what you've done is you've turned this hurt into some very positive things, and to become a prolific writer and musician, and to do everything, teacher, everything that you've done. I want to congratulate you. I'm honored to be speaking to you.
very sweet of you, and I feel like you're one of the few people who are very perceptive on that subject. So I appreciate your telling me these things.
Well, Mitzi DeWitt is the voice that you're hearing, and hopefully we'll be hearing a lot more of her, Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Mitzi DeWitt. Mitzi, is there a website or a social media site that you can give that people can kind of follow your career, or is that not your thing?
I have a website. It's more about my books than it is my piano teaching.
Sure.
It's just, you can just go to MitziDeWitt.com, and it will come up as the Cosmology of Music, and there's a whole lot of stuff on that website.
Well, listen, congratulations. We encourage everyone to go to Mitzi's website and get her books. She is a wonderful, wonderful writer, a wonderful thinker, brilliant woman, and in many ways a Renaissance woman. And Mitzi, I want to thank you very much for being here and sharing your experiences.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate your having me on the air.
Frank McKay here signing off. Mitzi DeWitt. Everyone, please go to her website and buy her books. Cosmology of Music is how you could find her on the web. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down. Frank McKay signing off.